There are so many people that I really would like to thank, and I wanted to mention Peter Oresic, who also really wanted to be here tonight. He's painting at a camp in eastern Pennsylvania. But I want to go back and step back to 1984, which is unbelievable, but and thank Jim Daniels, Frank Lehner, Nancy Korbel, who, along with Ed and I, started this magazine, and to thank our beloved Patricia Dobler and Lynn Emanuel, who came on next when Frank, Nancy, and Jim left the magazine. And then when Pat and Lynn left, Ed and I decided to keep chugging. So here we are. And I wanted to thank all the Ochesters. Ned Ochester. I don't even know if he's here tonight.
Yes.
Hey. What you don't see, no one sees, I never see, is what happens when the magazines come off the truck, and between that moment and the time they go to the mail and you get it, Ned is the person who really fulfills all of that part of the production. So thank you, Ned. I'm wearing my pirate necklace. And Betsy Ochester, whose line drawings have graced every issue. Betsy couldn't be here tonight. She's working. And Britt Ochester, who once called to say, you know what, you got a Bob Dylan lyric wrong. So I was forever embarrassed. She was proofreading the issue and found that, which Ed missed, I missed. And I want to thank Kelly Scarf. Are you here? She broke her foot, I think. So she, anyway, Kelly Scarf is our technical editor, and she's done all the magic with the computer design, et cetera. And I want to thank Joan and Jimmy for making this happen tonight. This is really wonderful. It's intense, and thank you very much. And I want to thank Ann Begler, who, before every issue, gets to the printer, to the truck, to Ned Ochester. Here's me curse for days and days about the proofreading and the production part, which I hated. So, thank you. I think we're just going to read some poems.
Or do you want to say something? One other thing one of the things that was true about the magazine is that when we started many years ago, it actually started in Hemingway's. And the five of us who initially started it were sitting at a table and doing what people do very often, saying, Jesus Christ, there's hardly a magazine you really want to read, you know, and blah, 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 blah. You've been running with this for a long time. And finally we started to talk about doing a magazine that people would want to read, that had poems by lots of different people from lots of different walks of life, from lots of different persuasions of all kinds, to try to make a magazine that would appear to be, in some ways, a mirror of America. And that started, like a lot of other good things, in Hemingway's. That night when I got home, I found that Frank Lehner had stolen an ashtray from Hemingway's and stuck it in my tote bag, which is something that he liked to do regularly. I have something like three or four dishes or ashtrays from Hemingway's that came from Frank Lehner. But although we're a little bit more serious now than we were then, the magazine started then with goodwill and good talk, which hopefully is a part of Hemingway's that'll continue.
And I want to thank all the readers tonight. Thank you for entrusting to us and all the people who didn't read tonight, you know, the work that you spent so much time making. All right, we're going to read a few poems. The Great Lakes. Suckle the great blue swollen lungs, many-breasted, multi-graped clusters. Now I know joy is impersonal. Swelling makes me full, pausing like a sleepy baby, gorging, passing out from it. Gaze into blue so viscous, though it has been oil-streaked, set fire to, dredged for ore, shat into by the great ships of Commodore Perry, pissed into by me, encouraged to do so by my bocce, who said in Polish, my mother translating, it is vast and clean and takes away all the germs from winter long. Joy, impersonal, eyeball to infant cells, inside Lake Erie's stopped down gray cape of clouds and heron, ceiling of feathers, water over my four-year-old head, unspeeding above me, it seems eternal, though I have no such language then.
I'm glad that Mike Sims read the poem by Dave about Whitman, because this is a poem about Whitman that I want to read. It's somewhat different in tone, but a couple of weeks ago I was listening again to the latest, I think it is, Van Morrison album, Born to Sing, and I've always been a fan of Morrison's. I've noticed that in recent years, on many albums, he complains a lot. You know, he wants to be alone. He wants to get away from people. He wants to go down to Monte Carlo by himself. He's not exactly the same working class guy he used to be. And this poem came out of listening to that and thinking about things. It's one of a number of poems I have that are dated. This is just June 11th. Van says he was born to sing, is singing in the rain. And I remember Levine saying most people are born to kvetch, but only a few make it big either way. Example, almost everyone who heard of Poe, Edgar Allan, hated him, and not many had heard of him. When he died, the only poet at his funeral was Whitman, who was ignored in his turn. Emerson wrote an early tepid appreciation, but later backed off. Eventually, the French convinced us Poe was a genius. As I write this, it's raining. Raining for days. On and on. If you want to sing, do so at your peril. Here's something you may not know about Whitman. After 3 years as an army nurse tending Civil War wounded, Whitman finally got a clerk's job in the Interior Department at $600 a year. But when Lincoln's new Secretary of Interior, James Harlan, found out that Whitman was the author of a book called Leaves of Grass, he immediately sang out, fire his ass! And it was done. Born to Sing.
Another love poem to Pittsburgh. This is called the Tin Ceiling Poem. Our table at the old New Meadow Grill on Larimer has a window on Jimmy Furlow's new farm. Kids are picking lettuce for the first time, and you're translating poems stamped into the white tin ceiling our great uncles nailed to the lathe. You can complain about the cat piss wine for 3 seconds, but we're half a city away from the streets where flower wreaths hang on iron spikes. We're eating, and we're going to eat, while the kids unpave the broken curbs so wild cresses can grow. And they're lining a wheelbarrow with behemoth spring greens Miss Ruth will chop into the sweet onion layers of the 11th Ward. We're long gone from the forced narcissi people opening their mouths to white caviar and shouting about themselves on fuckbook. We're thrilled when they lay us on ice, and we're ecstatic when they toss us onto the back of the open truck.
Karaoke night at the Serbian Club, Southside, Pittsburgh. Two young, toothless guys with enormous gusto sing Stairway to Heaven. That's a haiku, by the way.
Full of surprises. I want to say, a long time ago, maybe like 25 years ago, I asked Jimmy Savetic to send poems to 5 a.m., and he never would. It took 20 years. That's true. Isn't that true? Yeah. The last major coffee war really happened in 1954. When Getúlio Vargas, the president of Brazil, died. And this poem is in several sections. They're all tiny, short sections. I'll pause between them. It's called Goddess in the Coffee Grove. Thin coffee water till Albuquerque, and the rancher filling our tall cups. Is it strong enough? Relief of chicory and pinon. Sweet and nourishing her soul. In a spot between fields working harvest in the thicket, they show her their thousand eyes, citrine, peridot, bright green. On the cool mats, the scarlet mosaic ripening now, sweet and nourishing her soul. Before shooting himself through the heart, the last note of Getúlio Vargas to the internationalists, morning of August 24th, 1954. I have given you my life, I fear nothing. Serenely, I take my first step toward eternity and leave life to enter history. There is nothing more to give you except my blood. Their flimsy cardboard stencils bear her head and its crown of dark stars.
August 5th, family reunion. Bed and breakfast, every room stuffed with antique dolls, Disney lunchboxes, tintypes. Living room, teetering end tables, a minefield for little kids. Keep them out of there. Breakfast okay, except for biscuits big as babies' heads covered with sausage gravy. Many jokes among the 20-somethings about planking. And as always at these things, much talk about the rectitude and senility of the passed on parents, whose religion consisted largely of smacking and scrubbing. And then my cousin William, the Ben Franklin reenactor, tells about the time he was in an L.A. hotel in colonial costume, wearing a pair of glasses with false eyebrows and a penis for a nose. The hotel manager followed him around, said he must remove those glasses, that they weren't appropriate for the decorum of a Marriott.
River. The streets. The stones under the water, told the fountain, glisten for us. The fountain told the hilltops, you shaped the waterways. The hilltops told the skyscrapers, you're trembling. The skyscrapers told the street vendors, close up, rains are coming. The vendors told the air, our sleeves are filling with your wind. The air told all the bridges, you're agitating and the water reflects you. The bridges told the river, don't leave us.
I just realized that I brought two poems back to back, which have the word penis in them, which, and I just want to say as a disclaimer, I'm writing many poems that do not contain the word penis.
Not true.
Well, it's largely true. this is a poem that was generated a little while ago when my daughter called to say something about our granddaughter, who at that time was age 4, and then a few weeks later was age 5. This poem is just called Age 4. My daughter calls, when Quincy got back from preschool, she snuck up behind her and yelled, penis! Then hopped around the room yelling, penis, 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 and told her, Brent is very penis-y. The Science Museum is very penis-y. Grandma L is very penis-y. Then, have you ever seen Dad without his clothes on? And when answered in the affirmative, spun around the room again. Oh, how are we? My daughter says, we have our work cut out for us. And as I hear the kid running down the hall chanting, penis, 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 it's like the Pope's nightmare about Eve escaping Eden. I tell my daughter, it sounds as though the golden age is over.
This is the last poem I'll read. Saying goodnight to roses. Surely after midnight they're Persian, persica, molten peaches lifted from the lemon magenta fire. Fire in my face when I place them in water, fire down in the street in a barrel where 100 strikers are warming their hands against the massive chill of 2 wealthy men. Beep if you support us. And I beeped, dead tired, driving home. I came in and poured a glass of Merlot, the roses still sleeping in their crisp paper. Everybody I love is sleeping. The kitchen's a cafe, smoke, mirrors, black and white tile with hairline cracks. To read, to sleep, to walk around the table dizzy with their scent. Velvet heads, I want you for your ideas. Your brain petals revive me just enough to wonder what my dreams will be like. The passageway opens and I wander in. Remain your modest beholder in love. Good night.
This is my last, and it's called The Goldberg Variations, which is a poem partly about the Bach piece called that. Goldberg Variations. Instead of writing the speech I have to deliver next week, I'm listening to the music Bach wrote for his student, Johann Goldberg, who was employed by an insomniac count who wanted music through his long nights. Don't we all? And I wonder what the Nazis did with this piece. They couldn't disappear the Urmeister of German music the way they did poor Mendelssohn. Perhaps they renamed it the Goebbels Variations, the bastards, which illustrates how a great culture can sour in the blink of an eye, or auf Deutsch ein Augenblick, perhaps even ours one day. But enough sadness. How lovable is the endless invention of Bach, who must have loved Goldberg, to expend such energy and grace on this music, even though he was given a little casket of golden coins in payment by the Count, Bach, the ever practical. And now I've come to the 31st variation and the aria, the end, and must try to emulate him who was so disciplined in his art, and who perhaps, after chatting happily with young Goldberg, sighed for a moment, then said, "Back to work." Thank you. Thank you very much. I just want to say, too, that one of the things that has been wonderful about the magazine is just the kind of correspondence, the conversation with people in the city of Pittsburgh, which obviously both Judy and I love in many ways. This is a great place to write. It's a great place to be. And although I'm an adopted New Yorker, I have been here for more than 40 years. So that qualifies, I guess, as Pittsburgher. So I think of Judy and myself as two Polish kids who just are living in a good place. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night.